Good morning and welcome to this episode of the Full Prayers Radio's podcast. My host, Terrence Biggs, with me is Ryan Holmes. The Raiders completed 3 days of drafting, and it's an interesting one. It started off not how most thought, but we're definitely going to get into it. Ryan, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's been a long 3 days watching the NFL draft and seeing the moves the Raiders made, so we'll definitely get into some of these here shortly.
Now, we need to talk about, of course, I'm going to start at the beginning with the 17th pick. The Raiders selected Alex Leatherwood, offensive lineman from Alabama. Now, initially the thought was that he checked all of the Tom Cable long arms type of prerequisites, but what was your initial gut feeling? Like, what was your first thought?
My first thought was shock, you know. It was not that they took an offensive tackle, but that they took him in that spot when Darius Shaw was still on the board. Tevin Jenkins, who has been mocked to the Raiders and is a natural right tackle, still on the board. I thought Leatherford was more of Leatherwood was more of a late one, you know, early two. I didn't think he was going to make it to 48. But again, this is a guy that's played left tackle and a little bit of right guard, but he hasn't played right tackle. So you're having to transition him over. And just the value in the pick. This is kind of and we've talked about this, where the Raiders were locked in based on the holes they had on this team going in the draft, and this has happened in all four of John Gruden's drafts, that they had to fill the right tackle, they had to fill the free safety. And I thought they could have traded down. I have no problem with Leatherwood the player. If they wanted to move down and take him, you know, in the mid-20s, you know, late 20s, and pick up additional draft capital. But to take him at 17 with other players on the board was a reach, and I'm just going to say it. They did it with Cleveland Farrell. They reached. They did it a little bit with John Abram. They did it with, you could argue, Ruggs, although I would argue that the Niners might have taken him with the next pick before they traded down and picked up Kinlaw. They did it with Arnett. It feels like the Raiders get locked in on one specific player, and he's so high on their board that they don't understand the value the other teams have on him. Now, and Mike Mayock even addressed that on the post-conference. He said there was a team that wanted to come up. They wanted to tackle, by all reports. That was the Vikings. They took Darisaw, so I don't think that they were locked in on Leatherwood. Vic Tafer reported that the Ravens would have considered him at 27, but the Raiders wouldn't have gone down that far. They could have gone down to, you know, 23, 24, 25 and still got him. And if you get jumped at that point and someone takes him, fine, take Darisaw, take Jenkins. There were other options there, but this is a Tom Cable pick. It's the strength, it's the run blocking, it's the arm length, it's the fact he's the team captain, it's the fact that he won all these awards, and he's a four-year starter at Alabama. So if he turns out to be an average right tackle, which is what I think he's going to be, it's going to be an okay pick, but they passed up much better players on the board, and they could have gotten value out of this. So I'm still kind of upset about it.
For me, it's weird how, when you look at the pick, not so much the pick itself is something I wouldn't have definitely gone for, but it's the surrounding where you have Raiders digital media reporters wholeheartedly endorsing and just coming out, and you have Raiders adjacent media themselves criticizing pundits who rarely agree on anything as far as the draft. Rarely agree to a man, to a woman, to a person, condemn this pick as being a super reach. Do you think the Raiders are trying to convince themselves that it was a good pick, or do you think they're just doing a bunch of spin and damage control?
Well, I think they honestly believe that he was the highest player on the board, and they all agreed he was the pick. My problem, again, is the value, that they don't understand the rest of the value around the league and where these players are. The whole point of the draft is a return on investment. It's not to get an average player with a premium pick. That's not the goal. The goal is to get difference makers that can affect your franchise and help you win. And this player, the return on investment here, unless he proves everyone wrong and he's a Pro Bowler, the return on investment's not going to be good. And then if you have to kick him inside the guard, it's definitely not going to be good. So That's my thing. And there, you know, you saw Raiders Twitter, the Las Vegas Raiders Twitter handle tweeting out, you know, kind of half-heartedly, like, everyone thinks he's a reach and all that. Well, this Raiders regime with John Gruden, since they've been drafting, doesn't get the benefit of the doubt based on the guys that they've reached for in the first round, besides Colton Miller, who turned out to be a good player. And I can go through John Gruden's John Gruden's four drafts and tell you that they had the highest rated grades on Brandon Parker in the third round, Arden Key in the third round, P.J. Hall in the second round. Obviously, Arnett, we've talked about. Farrell, like, how did all those picks turn out? Are any of those guys difference makers? The answer is no. So why should they get the benefit of the doubt? And Colton Miller, in all honesty, I'd say he's a slightly above average left tackle. He's not a Pro Bowler, but for the value at 15, he turned out okay. But I just think that they don't get the benefit of the doubt until these players go out there and prove it.
For me, if they had took the safe route throughout the drafts and picked like your Devin Whites, guys like that, and they reached with Alex Leatherwood here, fine, you know what? It's a reach. They've earned that collateral. They have no trust collateral with this fan base. Or let me rephrase that. They have no trust collateral with the intelligent part of this fan base. Like, it's stunning that there are so many people writing for this pick when there were guys in the second round or bottom of the first, as you mentioned, you could have had him, and you could have dropped back to, like, 22-ish, right? Grabbed a couple more picks and been fine with it. No one would have batted an eye. And this is not a slight against Alex Leatherwood. It is not. People want to say, oh, you don't know. It's not him. It's the value. There's a difference. People can't discern the player from the value of the spot. That's what they failed to understand. Now, when we come back, I want to discuss round two, and I was rather surprised. You're listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, the Raiders actually got their man in Trevon Mehring. Did you think that he would, first, they had to trade up from 48 to 43. Do you think that he would be there at 43?
I did not. And we've been saying over the past couple of weeks that they were going to have to trade up for either him or Richie Grant, whichever one they got in the second round was not going to make it to 48. So I'm glad they traded up. After they saw, you know, Holland actually came off the board first, Richie Grant comes off second, then there's really one safety left that can come in and play the center field free safety position in this cover three defense. I like the pick. Obviously, there was some medical concerns from his pro day that were reported during the draft that caused a little bit of slide there. By all accounts, according to Trayvon, he's 100%, not a non-issue. So I do like the fact they showed some aggressiveness and went up and got him there. And I've heard a lot of Raider fans say, well, if they took Merrick in the first and Leatherwood in the second, no one would say anything. And I had an instant flashback to 2000 when the Raiders took Sebastian Janikowski in the first round and Jerry Porter in the second. And they all said the same thing back then. If they took Jerry Porter in the first and Janikowski in the second, no one would say anything. Well, it turns out Janikowski was a much better pick than Jerry Porter turned out to be. But I like Merrick as a player. They absolutely had to get that free safety, and I like the fact they even doubled down after that with additional safeties that we'll talk about. But really good pick. I love the aggressiveness from Mike Mayock to fill that spot.
I have no issue with this one. And it was – they got a free safety. As we mentioned, that Carl Joseph is not the answer. He's not the answer there, but – in Mehring, you have a true free safety. You have a guy who excels in space and excels with range and perhaps will probably act as the eraser to the coverage nightmare that is Jonathan Abram. Like, we all know it. People are like, oh, Paul Gunther. Jonathan Abram had a year after he broke his shoulder in the first game of the, I want to say, 2019 season. He had a year. He had 15 games to sit there and watch and to pick up the nuance of playing safety in this league and be able to develop some sort of inkling of sound coverage. No, he just didn't. And they need somebody back there. It's pretty much like in basketball when you have four bad defenders, but you have that center back there to block shots. It's pretty much the Manute Bol, you know, you're going to stand at the rim and knock it down. That's what Mehring hopefully will be for the Raiders. Now, they also added in the third round, Malcolm Kuntz, edge rusher from Buffalo. Did you think they kind of not? This wasn't a reach. Do you think that he was overdrafted?
This is interesting. To be all honest, I don't know a ton about him until after they picked him, and I did a little bit more research on him. A small school guy, undersized. He actually fits kind of what the Leo defender in this defense looks like, and we knew they didn't have any on the roster before they signed Ngakoue. So they obviously identified this guy. You can never have enough pass rushers. I'm not going to knock them, even if you want to say it's a reach, and a lot of people thought he was going to go, you know, late fourth, early fifth. I have no problem taking him there. If he pans out and it can be at least a situational guy that can give you, you know, five or six sacks off the edge, his tape looks pretty good. He's explosive. He has bend. Mayock even comped into Ngakoue. So I actually, you know, it doesn't surprise me they addressed the backup position at Leo. I knew they were going to do that at some point. I was a little surprised with the player, but after a little bit more research on him, I'm fine with it. I'd rather they take that guy if they believe he can get to the quarterback at that point than try to wait and lose him.
I was rather intrigued by it, and I went back and I watched some of his tape, and to your point, you hit the nail on the head. They have such a limited pass rush outside of Crosby and Ngakoue, and I really think that we should have seen our last of Carl Nassib. Unfortunately, his contract keeps him in silver and black. Kuntz definitely has the flexibility to give them a spark. I have no issue with it. Another non-issue, safety Divine Diablo was the 80th pick, which was a pick right after Kuntz. People are trying to, they're saying that he will be slotted as some sort of weak side linebacker. How do you see his game translating from Blacksburg to Vegas?
I would agree that, you know, from the studies I've done on him, he is going to transition into that Will linebacker. He's a little high cut in the hips. He's 6'3", 6'3 and a half, 226 pounds. He can really run. This move really reminds me of when the Chargers took Kaiser White out of West Virginia. It was a big safety, moved him into a weak side linebacker role, and he's starting now with the Chargers. He's turned out to be a pretty good coverage linebacker that can blitz a little bit. I don't see him having much of a role, honestly, the first year. In that Will spot, he's going to be behind Corey Littleton. You would think that Nicholas Morrow would slide over as the next guy in that position in the nickel package. So he's basically going to play special teams unless there's a lot of injuries on this team. But then Nicholas Morrow's on a one-year contract. They can get out of Littleton's contract next year if it doesn't work out. So, and Gus Bradley is going to play nickel or dime defense over 60% of the time. So he's got to have speed the second level at the linebacker role. How is he going to hold up in the box against the run? That's to be determined. Hopefully they can get the lead in some of these games and not have to stop the run as much. I've had a lot of people reach out to me and ask why he can't stay at strong safety. I don't think they would have taken him that spot to be a clear backup to John Abram, who is probably, with the rest of their picks, there's a chance John Abram is going to be playing a lot of that nickel linebacker as well, or dime linebacker in this defense. Just get him closer to the line of scrimmage and let him blitz, let him play in the flat, and take away some of that deep coverage responsibility. But I do like the pick. The one concern I have, and it takes me back to last year, is Mike Mayock said third-round picks should be starters. He's made five of them the last 2 years. Brian Edwards is the only one of the four that has any chance of starting this year, and I could argue the only one of the four that has a chance to start next year. So we're getting a lot of special teams value, it seems, hopefully, out of Tanner Muse, who might be on the bubble. He might not even be on this roster because he's a little linebacker as well, unless he transitions to the middle, which I don't think he's physical enough to do that. You could be looking, Bowden's gone. Brian Edwards will be a starter. Tanner Muse, roster bubble, in my opinion. Diablo, a much better prospect than Muse, but probably a backup special teams guy. And then we could argue that, as good as Kuntz is, I don't know if he's ever going to be a full-time starter in this league. He might just be a situational rusher his whole career. So unless he can hold up better in the run and prove me wrong, there's a chance they only got one starter out of those five third-round picks.
And on top of that, they went safety yet again with the 143rd pick. They chose Tyree Gillespie of Missouri. Now, this one is weird to me because this is in the school of Nick Nelson and Nevin Lawson as guys with suspect ball skills. What'd you see from Tyree Gillespie that makes you think that he might stick?
I actually think that he's going to back up Abram with a strong safety. I don't think they're going to pencil him in as a free safety. So this, to me, puts Carl Joseph on the roster bubble. Raider fans might go crazy if they hear that. But he's much better running the alley. He's much better in run support and coming downhill. And I think this is more to have another athlete on the back end, because in this defense, you clearly need the two safeties are very important in the cover three defense, along with the Will linebacker and the Leo. You have to have those four positions. So if there was an injury to Jonathan Abram, which there's a good chance there will be, he gets nicked up and he gets injured quite a lot, I don't think they felt comfortable rolling with Carl Joseph and Jeff Heath behind there. So to get another dynamic athlete that can really run and play and get into run support, and if you have to play him at free safety, let's say something happens to Merrick for a couple of weeks, like he's fast enough, he could probably do it. You're not going to get a ton of interceptions, but the Raiders don't have another safety that's an athlete back there that can run. And I don't think there was any way they were ever going to put Abram back there in the post. So Abram's locked in is the strong safety in the cover three scheme. So I think Gillespie gives him a guy that can back up Abram, and then if you need him to, he could play free safety. And I think Heath and or Joseph and clearly Levitt, one of those three guys might make this roster. I think there's an outside chance to make it, but it could very easily be one of those three.
Now, one of the things that I see and I look at, and the secondary, they're putting a lot of emphasis and a lot of work into it. Some of that is Bradley. How much of John Gruden's ear after this draft do you think that Gus Bradley has?
Well, clearly him and Ron Millis have a lot, because they basically came in. They clearly weren't happy with what the safety and cornerback options were on this roster when they came in, despite the Raiders have spent premium capital back there. Mullen, Arnett, Robertson was a fourth-round pick. Johnson was a fourth-round pick. Abram was a first-round pick. Carl Joseph was a first-round pick who they brought back, and clearly they wanted to upgrade all those positions. So Gus Bradley, like I said, if you don't have the safeties, the Will linebacker and the Leo, you can't run this defense. So clearly he wanted as many reinforcements as he could at those four spots. I still think they need a slot corner. I don't know much about Nate Hobbs. Sounds like they're going to try him out in the slot. He played outside mostly at Illinois. Amik Robertson clearly didn't take to the slot last year, although in a much more complex defense. I don't know if you can roll into the season and those are your only two options inside. I still think they need an outside corner. They still need a veteran presence. I don't think that Rasul Douglas is going to be the answer. I'm not sold on Damon Arnett. I think Mullen you can pencil in as a starter, but, you know, I could still see them going after Casey Hayward, or even if you bring in a Richard Sherman. I don't love it. I wouldn't hate it. You know, a veteran guy that can come in that knows the defense, even if he only plays, let's say, 6, 7, 8 weeks till some of the other guys are ready. But I don't think you can roll into the season right now with the secondary they have and pencil in Arnett as an outside starter and have Robertson and Hobbs battle it out and think that you're going to be good enough in coverage, especially in the AFC West. And imagine if Aaron Rodgers somehow finds his way to Denver and plays those three quarterbacks 6 times a year and have so much inexperience on the outside.
Now, another pick. They finished up with Jimmy Morrissey, the center out of Pittsburgh. Do you think that he has a chance to stick, or will he just be camp fodder at this point?
Initial reaction is I think he's headed to the practice squad just to have another center in the system. Overachiever type, he's good in the outside zone. The one thing that Leatherwood and Morrissey can do is they're best suited for this kind of offense, where the Raiders are clearly going to an outside zone run attack next year. So to get a guy in there, Nick Martin, I believe, is on a one-year deal. So if Nick Martin comes in for a year, helps out, moves on, and you already have his replacement in-house with a year under his belt. So I'm okay with that pick. I thought they were going to address either guard or center there with that last pick, so they did go center. I do like that they went to the defensive tackle in the undrafted free agent ranks. I'm sure we'll talk about Mr. Stills here in a second, but I have no problem in the seventh round taking an all-ACC center with 4 years of starting history under him. Now, he has short arms and he's a limited athlete, but he should be able to get away with it in the system if you need him to play. But I don't think he takes any snaps next year. We're talking 2022, 2023, hopefully.
Now, you have mentioned one of the undrafted free agents that I'm actually kind of intrigued about. The Raiders signed Darius Stills. the defensive tackle from West Virginia. Now, I thought that he would go 3, maybe 4, but he slid all the way out of the draft. What does he bring that you saw that would impact this team most?
Well, it's interior pass rush. He's an undersized guy, 6'1", probably 285, 290, but he gets to the quarterback. He has 10.5 sacks. I think something upward of 50 pressures or something, a big number from the interior rushing the passer. And he's doing that in the Big 12 where it's a lot of, quick passing, where they're getting the ball out quick into the flat. So he's not doing it in a conference where it's a drop back passing league. He has time. So he can get there fairly quickly to the quarterback. Now, is he going to hold up in the run game? Yet to be determined. Is he ever going to be a full-time starter? I don't know. But is a guy that can come in and help some inside pass rush on third downs, and just be a rotational piece to get him where they is an undrafted free agent is good. If they would have taken this guy in the 5th, 6th, or 7th round, I wouldn't have any problems with that. So that was a spot I think they definitely needed to address. He basically is a younger version of Maurice Hurst, and hopefully he has a little bit better sack production. And, again, there's no defensive tackles on this roster that are under contract for next year. So he has a clear chance to make this team and then also get enough rotational snaps to where he could be a guy that could get a lot more playing time in 2022, 2023.
Now, what player did you think that was there for the Raiders in, let's say, day two, that you felt that they overlooked that could have been an impact player to start?
I still go back to Spencer Brown, who we've talked about, the big long tackle from Northern Iowa. Leatherwood's a good pick. I'm still not sold. Or he'll be an average starter. I won't call him a good pick yet. But they still lack depth of tackle. I don't trust Brandon Parker at all, whether that's backing up at left tackle or right tackle. So I thought they were going to get another tackle there with some length. I wouldn't have a problem if they double dipped there and went there. We'll see. Because if this team has an injury to either Leatherwood or Colton Miller, we're going to see what the offense is going to look like at that point. So I don't know if they're done addressing the offensive tackle spot. They may still bring in a veteran, at least a Sam Young type, someone that can come in and be serviceable if there's something happens to one of those other two guys.
While I despise the idea and concept of the letter grade because it's just not really been my thing, since we see it in so many other places, what letter grade would you give the Raiders? First glance,
I'll say C+. And I know a lot of Raider fans are probably going to think that I'm crazy. They all want A's or B's. But again, if we step back and look at this, take a 30,000 foot view, they didn't get enough value at the first pick, even if he turns out to be an average or slightly above average tackle. I love the second pick. In the third round, you probably got a situational pass rusher and a special teams guy for a couple of years. Then you traded up and took a safety who hopefully won't play much this year. And then added a center who might be on the practice squad. So how much are they actually going to get out of this draft class in terms of snaps and production? It's not going to be as much as Raider fans think, other than Merrig. And maybe Leatherwood surprises everyone. But even if those two guys are solid, they probably could have come out of this draft with 3 or 4 starters. I'm going to say they have 2, and it's the obvious 2 holes they had to fill because they didn't fill those in free agency. I still would have liked to see a better option at slot corner and or an outside corner to help push those guys.
I mean, I'd give them the same because I see 2 starters, 2 sub-package guys, and 3 guys that probably won't touch the field.
Yep.
And it's one of those things that you would hope the Raiders would actually get this right and start fixing it. So all of the weight of the expectations on this entire draft rest with Alex Leatherwood and Trayvon Merrick. Now, how would people contact you on social media?
Oh, they can reach out to me. The handle is @rholm22. It's RHOLM22.
One of the best out there, Ryan Holm. Thank you so much for joining us on the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.